turn in your Bibles to John
chapter 4, because tonight we're going to look at a question that we're raising a question that we'll examine from a text in the latter part of John chapter 4. We're simply asking the question to begin, is Jesus trustworthy? Now, I'm pretty sure that all of us would very immediately, very quickly answer in the affirmative about that. Of course, Jesus is trustworthy, but what if you had no prior relationship with Jesus? What if you knew very little about Jesus? And we're going to take ourselves back to the days when Jesus walked the earth during his ministry, and even somewhat early in that ministry, before much of his ability was known and manifested to so many people. And we're going to take you even to a situation in the latter part of John chapter 4 where a man who evidently was not even a disciple of Jesus at this point when he's introduced to us, and he approaches Jesus with a dilemma that he has, a situation that he has, to ask Jesus to help him. Obviously, he had some idea that Jesus was trustworthy. You and I have a much greater idea about that based on the years of our faith and our development of an understanding of Jesus through the Scriptures. But put yourself in this man's shoes, put yourself in this man's position, and asking the question, is Jesus trustworthy? We read from our text tonight in John 4, beginning at verse 43. Now after the 2 days, he departed from there and went to Galilee. For Jesus himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. So when he came to Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all the things he did in Jerusalem at the feast, for they also had gone to the feast. So Jesus came again to Cana of Galilee. We saw him there in John 2. But he came again to Cana of Galilee, where he had made water wine. And there was a certain nobleman whose son was sick at Capernaum. When he heard that Jesus had come out of Judea into Galilee, he, the nobleman, went to him and implored him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. Jesus said to him, unless you people, and it's plural there apparently, he's not just addressing the man and singling him out by himself, but making a broader statement, unless all of you, unless you people, there's a plural there in the original, unless you see signs and wonders, you will by no means believe. The nobleman said to him, sir, come down before my child dies. Jesus said to him, go your way, your son lives. So the man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him, and he went his way. And as he was now going down, his servants met him and told him, saying, your son lives. Then he inquired of them the hour when he got better. And they said to him, yesterday at the 7th hour, the fever left him. So the father knew that it was at the same hour in which Jesus said to him, your son lives. And he himself believed, and his whole household. This again was the second sign Jesus did when he had come out of Judea into Galilee. As we develop this topic tonight, we see this nobleman is a man who apparently had no connection with Jesus, and at least as far as being a disciple, like many of the others that we are familiar with in Jesus' ministry, who eventually would become his apostles. But in this particular text, in his desperation for the life of his son, who is at the point of death, he approaches Jesus and asks Jesus to help him, to heal him. Obviously, based on what little he knew about Jesus at this point, remember this is still somewhat early in Jesus' ministry, but even based on that information, he realized that Jesus had some kind of ability to help him, some kind of ability to bless him. And he approached him because, at least to some degree, he understood, he believed, Jesus was trustworthy. And we will see how this man's faith will begin initially and then grow and develop and even spread to others. And as we look at what happens with this man And in this scenario, this situation, I hope that we can make the applications to our own lives when we ask the question and we remind ourselves, we ask the question, is Jesus trustworthy? Can I trust God? And we remind ourselves, yes, He is. There are about six or seven ways that we want to develop this tonight as we think about faith. Remember our theme for this year, this is a trustworthy saying. And we find that word, that term trustworthy, several times in the Scriptures, especially in the New Testament. And it is basically very synonymous with the word we also find in the Bible, faith. Sometimes it depends on the context, how it is translated, but often trust and faith come from the same word, or at least a derivative of the same root word. And so tonight we're asking the question, since our endeavor this year is to study different lessons throughout the year about trustworthy, is Jesus trustworthy? Where is my faith in Jesus? What kind of faith do I have in Jesus? And I think there are many lessons we can learn from the nobleman in John chapter 4. So let's dig in and jump in and see what we can learn. Number one, there is the beginning of faith. Again, we have no significant reason to believe that this man was a disciple in the same way that Peter and James and John and some of the others were disciples of Jesus. But he had heard of Jesus, and perhaps he thought Jesus could heal him. And notice when he addresses Jesus, such as verse 49, he simply calls him Sir. He doesn't say Messiah or teacher or anything like that. He just calls him a very respectful term. He has respect for Jesus. But this is sort of the beginning point, the germination of this man's faith, because he had such a desperate family need. His son was not only sick. The New King James Version translates that his son was at the point of death. Just almost as somewhat of a side note, we have to see here that sorrow does not respect persons. He was a nobleman. Perhaps he had a position in the administration of King Agrippa. Maybe he worked with King Herod. It's not a lot of the details are given there. But perhaps he was very prominent, a nobleman. Perhaps he was also very wealthy. Most of the noblemen of Jesus' day were wealthy. But irrespective of his status, irrespective of his position in society, sorrow, tragedy, is knocking at his door. And we see that it is not about how much money we have or our status in society that determines some of our blessings or even our sorrow. The man's position did not safeguard him or prevent him from enduring things like this. But rather than making it a point where he simply became hardened of heart, turned against God, turned against anything that was spiritual in nature, it sparked a beginning, a germination of faith with him. That maybe this one who works these miracles, maybe this one who maybe he had heard claimed to be the Son of God, or perhaps was aware that there was something bubbling around him about the Messiah and the chosen one of God and so on. Jesus had not formally declared that, at least to the vast public yet. But something there, rather than turning this man away from a spiritual solution, began to move him toward a spiritual solution. That's the beginning of faith. That's the germination of faith. But now number two, let's think about the approach of his faith. And we see that it involved direct action on his part. No third party involved here. The nobleman did not send someone else to request Jesus. The nobleman did not send, you know, a sum of money to pay for the services of Jesus. The nobleman directly himself came to Jesus. You may recall sometimes when perhaps we were in elementary school and maybe you had a crush on that guy or you had a crush on that girl. but you were too timid to approach that other individual, and so you got a third party to intervene, you know, a mutual friend, and it was rough being that mutual friend, because you had to keep going back between, do you like him, does he like me, and so you're going back and forth like that. No third party here. This man, in the approach of his faith, directly himself personally went to Jesus. And so notice, even at this stage of our understanding of faith, and how very initial this man's faith is beginning to grow and develop, and will grow so much more as we work through this lesson, it still involved action. It involved behavior. He acted on what he believed. And the same is still true for you and me today. And I want you to notice, even though he was a nobleman, a man who could have afforded many things, a man who could have bought many things, a man who could have bought the services of someone like Jesus, the text tells us in verse 47 that he implored. He begged Jesus to come and to heal his son. You hear the desperation, the sincerity, the earnestness of the approach of his faith. You see, as we are developing and our faith is growing and we're moving toward the trust of Jesus and determining that he is trustworthy, there must be an earnestness. There must be a deep sincerity that strips away the externals and strips away the distractions, and that we are point focused on Jesus and point focused on our lives and making the connection between my present situation and what we hope and believe Jesus can do for my present situation. So there is the beginning of his faith, the approach of his faith, and number three, a very unusual response from Jesus, and we're going to simply call this the rebuke of faith. When Jesus begs the man, when the man begs and implores Jesus, in verse 47, come and help me, Jesus in verse 48 appears to almost brush him off. There is a rebuke here about unless you see signs and wonders. And again, the you there is plural, and the New King James Version has clarified that a little bit by saying, unless you people, he's not addressing just the nobleman. He's addressing a mindset that apparently exists among many people, that unless they saw something supernatural, unless they saw a sign, a wonder, that they would by no means believe. In other words, they would by no means develop their faith the way that it needed to be developed. They would by no means determine that Jesus, that God, the Father of Jesus, was trustworthy. But why? When a man is begging you, imploring you, and you're the Son of God and have all power, why would you respond this way? Why would you appear to discourage the man in this way? Perhaps the solution to this is a couple of answers. Number one, Jesus was often known to test the faith of various people who approached him. And I don't think there's an exception here. Jesus is testing this man's faith. Even though it's still tender, it's still young, Jesus knew exactly how to deal with this person. Jesus knew exactly what to say, the tone of voice to say it in, and the approach with this man to take, because he knew his heart. And he knew the faith that was there, but it needed to be stimulated a little more. And so Jesus, on one level, was testing his faith. And after all, we have to stop and think for just a moment that sometimes the testing of our faith brings out the best, doesn't it? We may not look forward to it. We may not enjoy it. But sometimes it is the testing of our faith that brings us to a better level and strengthens us rather than tears us down. You see, Jesus is not trying to tear the man down, and I think that becomes very evident. But in response to Jesus telling the man what he did, I think there's another avenue that we need to explore for just a moment as we think about the rebuke of faith. And it seems to be implied, perhaps, that this man simply wanted the miracle. And that he was more focused on the miracle. He was focused, of course, on the healing of his son. But he thought the only way it could be done is if Jesus came there and Jesus performed a miracle like he was known to have done already on a few occasions. And perhaps Jesus is addressing an underlying thought process in the man's mind that needed to be clarified and rectified. Because perhaps it is the case that this nobleman is putting more faith in the miracle than in the one who could perform the miracle. The faith did not need to be so much in the miracle, and perhaps this man's faith was more in the miracle than in the one who would perform the miracle. We'll develop that a little more and look at it from a little different angle in a latter point here in a moment. But let those thoughts roll around in your mind as we consider Jesus' response that we are saying in this third point is a rebuke of faith. It implied apparently the man's faith would really not grow. He would really not trust Jesus unless he saw a miracle. Unless he saw Jesus do this. And we know ultimately that Jesus will supernaturally heal the man's son, but the man won't see Jesus do it, will he really? The man will not come, Jesus will not come to the man's house and do something that the man visibly sees right there. He only hears Jesus speak. He sees nothing that could be classified as supernatural. It's almost like it's done behind the scenes. And so he's wanting the man's faith to blossom even without visibly seeing a miracle performed before his very eyes. He's testing his faith because he wants the man's faith to be not so much in the miracle, but in the one who had the power, the one who had the power to perform the miracle. Number four, we will see there is the reward of faith. There is the rebuke, but then there is the reward, because after Jesus says what he does in verse 48, the nobleman still, I think, very earnestly, very sincerely, still with an imploring, begging tone of voice says, "Sir, come down before my child dies." He says, "This is my number one concern, and this is why I've come to you." And Jesus now responds to him, almost simplistically, "Go your way, your son lives." And then the next thing that we read, "So the man believed the word Jesus spoke to him and went his way." Now, that took a lot of faith. If my son was at the point of death, if my child was at the point of death, and I was convinced in a fairly strong way that Jesus, this man that I'm talking to, had the power, had the ability to heal him, that I needed to bring him to my son for this to occur, and then this man says, "Go your way, your son is healed." I haven't made the connection between the man and my son. I haven't seen Jesus approach my son and say anything to my son. In fact, the distance from where Jesus was when he was approached by the nobleman and the nobleman's son in Capernaum is estimated fairly accurately to be between 16 to 20 miles. About a day's journey for most folks in that time frame. It took a tremendous amount of faith for him to take Jesus at his word and to leave again, to return home, a very long journey, 16 to 20 miles, we can drive that in just a few minutes. That was not the case in 2,000 years ago. Now he must go, not yet knowing tangibly what had happened, But having heard Jesus, and it says he believed him. He believed Jesus had done something. Jesus did not have to be physically present to perform something supernatural or the miracle. He could heal over this distance. And he was wanting the man to see that Jesus had this ability and that he would have this reward of faith. The nobleman would not be put off. He would not be discouraged. He would not be turned away. And he would repeat his request because his faith was growing. It was tested and it was growing. And it was becoming more urgent. And now Jesus makes the very positive affirmation, your son lives. And so here is this reward of faith. And so let's merge into a fifth point, and that is the development of faith. Because he comes in with the beginning of faith, as we talked about a moment ago. There's this reward of faith, but now his faith will develop. It will begin to flourish. It will begin to grow because he has to take Jesus at his word. Now, with the development of faith, he is compelled to understand and show real faith. He's not just coming to hire a sensationalist. He has come to believe in the power of the one that he has just spoken with. And the statement that Jesus made was intended to help build the man's faith, not destroy it. Jesus knew how to do this because he knew the man's heart. And I want you to notice as we look at the text, it did not destroy the man's faith. It began to build the man's faith. And we are further impressed by the time frame as we look at this in regard to how this man's faith developed. The text tells us that Jesus is here in Cana of Galilee. The man's son, who's at the point of death, is in Capernaum. This is nearly 20 miles away, a day's journey. The nobleman had come to Jesus. But then, when he believes that Jesus has healed his son, and we're talking about the development of faith, he now will return home to find his son well. However, because he has spent a day in the journey there, apparently he is unable to return that same day. Because when his servants approach him, and we'll say a little more about them in just a moment, but when his servants approach him, look at the text, when his servants approach him and they say, your son is well, and he says, when did it happen? Look at their response. When did it happen? Yesterday. This is the next day. You know what that means? This man, somewhere between Cana and Capernaum, had to stop. It was nightfall. He was tired. The animal he was likely riding on was tired. And he had to stay the night, still not knowing with his own eyes the tangible answer that his faith was leading him to believe. His faith is developing. How well did he rest that night? I can't answer that question. But he had confidence. He believed. He was going his way, and perhaps he rested better than we might think. Because his faith was developing. Now he was compelled to show real faith, true faith, and to take Jesus at his word. He believed the healing had happened before he saw it with his own eyes. You and I, in our development of faith with the Lord, must believe the things that God has done, even though sometimes we may not see them with our own eyes. You may recall that when Thomas said that he would not believe that Jesus had risen from the dead unless, you know, he saw the nail prints and he saw the injuries that Jesus sustained from the crucifixion. He would not believe unless he saw those things. And then when Jesus finally appeared to Thomas, when he was there in that upper room the second time with the other disciples, that Jesus approaches him and says, look at my injuries, look and feel of these injuries, know that I'm real, do not be disbelieving, but believing. Thomas, when he sees these and knows that, he says, my Lord and my God, makes that great confession, my Lord and my God. And you remember what Jesus says to him? Thomas, you're blessed because you have seen and believed, but there are also blessings for those what? Remember what he says? Those who have not seen, yet what? Believe. That's the development of faith. And long before Thomas found himself in that scenario, the nobleman has not seen, yet believes. Remember our question? Is Jesus trustworthy? This man was coming to the conclusion that he was. But we have more to say. Number six, the confirmation of his faith. The confirmation of his faith. The nobleman is met by his servants, who no doubt in their great joy and excitement, they take off, you know, the next day to find the nobleman, only to meet him returning home. They have no idea what has happened. They just know that he was at the point of death and suddenly he's better. There's no implication here at all that the healing and the restoration of this son's health was gradual. In fact, the implication very strongly is that it was instantaneous. At this hour is when it happened. Not that he began to feel a little better, you know, before he went to bed that night, and the next morning he was feeling great, but at this hour is when it happened. When they told the nobleman these facts. And you notice they mentioned the hour very specifically because he asked, when did it happen? It only served as what? Confirmation. Confirmation, because he knew that's when he was with Jesus, and he knew that's when Jesus said, your son lives, go home. And so there's this great and tremendous confirmation. All the details, even the time element, confirm his faith. And as a result of that, when you look at verse 53, he knew that's when the hour was, he knew that's when all this took place, and he himself, look at the last sentence in verse 53, and he himself believed. He may not have been a disciple prior to this point, but I think he became one at this point. Now he believes in Jesus. You see, as we said a moment ago, perhaps one of the reasons Jesus says what he does and reacts initially the way that he does is because there's this mindset among many of the people that they believed more in the miracle than in the one who had the power to perform the miracle. Well, now this nobleman, you see, before he believed about Jesus, but now he believes in Jesus. Before he had heard of Jesus, now he knows Jesus. There's a confirmation of the faith that there is an answer in this man's mind and heart. Jesus is trustworthy. Jesus can be believed. Hear him. Believe him. And he didn't even have to see any of it happen. When it happened, he heard and he believed. And then he saw. And that only served to confirm all the more what Jesus had said. We hear the words of Jesus. We see the actions of Jesus. And that confirms all the more that He is trustworthy. But now number seven, our last point to make as we have analyzed this text, number seven, is the spread of faith. It started out with this nobleman. And the connection that he made with Jesus and how his faith started initially and then it began to grow and to blossom into to a much fuller form than it had been before. But I want you to look again at the text in verse 53. In the last part it says, "And he himself believed," as we read a moment ago, but we didn't finish reading it. Look at the last four words of verse 53. "And his whole household." Now, how did they come to believe? They weren't there. They didn't hear what Jesus said. How did they come to believe? The nobleman told them. He talked about it. He said, "This is what happened. This is how it happened. This is what he said. And here's the confirmation, because you told me before you knew any of these facts exactly the hour, and that's exactly when he told me." And not only did he believe, and did that confirm it for him and develop his faith, when he told those people of his household, when he told his family, when he told his servants, when he told his son, what did that do for them? They believed also. They had faith. Because they were hearing it from the man who understood it so very, very well. Faith ought to be infectious. Faith ought to be, you know, we're talking about the virus for the last many months, and that we don't want to spread these kind of things and we want to stay apart from one another. But that shouldn't be about our faith. We ought to want to contaminate other people with our faith to the greatest degree possible. I wish faith was as easy to catch as COVID-19 has been. And we see that his household believed, and you understand the power of faith, the spread of faith. And it is not that these people saw it or even spoke with Jesus, just like you and I have never seen Jesus in person. We've never spoken with him in person. But we hear what this nobleman said. We hear what John wrote. We hear what Peter said. We hear what all the other witnesses of Jesus when he was on the earth said. And what does that do for us? Well, it begins to germinate faith in our mind and heart. And then as that faith begins to grow, perhaps it is tested. But sometimes that can bring out the best. And as it is tested, then it is rewarded, and it develops more. It is confirmed, and then we just repeat the cycle, and we tell other people about it as well. And ultimately, we are pointing people back to Jesus. And we're seeing how faith can grow in the heart of any individual like it did with this nobleman. And so how is my faith growing? How is my faith developing? Is it slow and unsure or steady and progressive? Am I growing? Have I simply stopped at the getting in point? And I'm not developing in my faith? I'm not really fully affirming that Jesus is trustworthy? Or have I made it personal like this man did? And I know because I've heard and now I've seen and I believe and I respond. And so we extend the invitation of Christ tonight from our Bible lesson. Will you hear the words of Jesus? Will you believe the words of Jesus? Will you respond and obey the words of Jesus? Jesus said, "He who believes and is baptized, immersed, shall be saved." Hear Jesus. Believe Jesus. And we encourage you as we stand and sing, if you're ready to obey Jesus, would you please come?